Welcome to the Grace-Based Families Podcast. Understanding how God's grace can transform your relationships is a game changer. We hope today's episode can do just that. We're excited for you to listen in on the conversation.
I'm here today with Dr. Tim Kimmel. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Michelle. Glad to be back on this show with you.
Well, I picked out some really hot topics today, and I know that you love these kind of awkward conversations.
Oh, so. Yeah. A lot like inhaling bus fumes and having my gum scraped.
Exactly.
But they are, you know, they're issues that people, they're real. Mm-hmm. People trying to raise kids or be married or, you know, keep going through life without it just beating the heck out of you, it's work. And So yeah, if we can help, great. And what's interesting, most of the stuff we learn, we didn't learn from a book. We learned from living it,
right?
And not always living it right.
Yeah, you know? Well, you raised four kids, mm-hmm. and now you have a plethora of wonderful grandchildren. How many grandkids?
We have 10 right
10.
Now.
Okay. Yeah. So I know bedtime woes are, you know, it's been a while, but now I'm sure some of your kids are navigating that with their grandkids. So we hear this question a lot, but
yes.
Every bedtime can be a battle for parents. You literally are just fried by the end of the night. I have three little kids. They're getting a little better, but by the end of the night, I'm just not kind. I'm just like, I need you to go to sleep so I can relax. Can you just shh? So let's talk about that.
Kind of wish Fisher-Price made a little taser thing, you know?
I know. What do we do when we're at the end of a rope as parents when it comes to bedtime?
Yeah, look, bedtime and kids getting enough sleep is such a critical part of how the rest of their day and week is going to go and how your life goes. And yet, there are a lot of parents out there struggling when it comes to bedtime and getting their kids in bed, asleep, and not ready to, you know, call the police on them and all that stuff. I'm gonna say something here at the outset that maybe you never thought about, but I really think I have a major solution for so many of parents that are struggling out there. Let's pick a bedtime, 8 o'clock?
Sure.
Okay, if bedtime for your children is 8 o'clock, you need to start putting them to bed at 5 o'clock.
Oh, gosh. Before dinner, start thinking about bedtime. So,
now what I mean by that is you need to shift gears in that house around 5 o'clock because many times what I see are families that they're experiencing. I mean, it's just absolute pandemonium. The TV's on. They're on all their devices. The music's loud. Whatever it's going on, screaming, yelling, hard playing, fun playing, but it's just crazy. And then, you know, 15 minutes before the time to go, okay, kids, let's go to bed. No way. You got to downshift those kids. Mm-hmm. And so at 5 o'clock, let's just pick 5 o'clock as an answer that if you're home or you're coming home, even if you're still in the car carrying the kids back from school or some club afterwards, you shut the car, shut the noise down in the car too. You know, don't have on the radio and all that stuff. Just everything's quiet. And then you get to home and use dinner as a prelude for bedtime. Once again, a quieter dinner. Fun dinner, yeah, but a quieter dinner. And then the kids, some of them may have homework, they got to get some stuff done on that. But you want to start getting them moving towards their bed and the ritual that goes with bedtime a lot earlier than 5 or 10 minutes beforehand. And then a bedtime ritual is a good thing. You know, I've observed the parents that very effectively put their kids to bed, they have something that they do on a regular basis. They started it out when they were young, and those kids actually look forward to the process of going to bed. Mm-hmm. Whereas other kids, I mean, they see it as they're being cheated or something like that. What were some of the rituals that you guys did with your kids?
Yeah. So it's always, you know, dinner, bath time,
yep.
teeth, reading, songs, prayers, but yeah, and then bedtime. But it takes a lot longer than you think it does.
It does. You can't think you can do this in 5 minutes. you've got to, in your mind, as a parent, as a mother and a father, you've got to set aside, in the next hour, we're going to be focusing on these kids and helping them get but not by chasing them around and nagging them, mm-hmm. but by engaging them, helping them get their pajamas on if they're little. You know, here's the thing about the ritual. For some of these kids, that's the best time they have with their mother or father.
Yeah.
And it can be a very meaningful time. Little kids, reading to them is so critical. Now, here's the problem with reading to kids. You just want to read some quick story because you're so exhausted. Or you have a million things you're thinking about you need to be doing right now. Mm-hmm. I think, though, if we were better at seeing this as this time as one of the best gifts God has given us to imprint our kids' hearts for Him, mm-hmm. with love, with security, with a greater sense of purpose, then maybe we wouldn't try and rush through it so much. Mm-hmm. And I understand, you know, it's the end of the day. I understand being tired. But if there's any time we need to play hurt as a parent, it's when we're tired, but those kids really need this kind of attention. So we were like that, giving our kids, you know, they get their baths and their jammies on, and then reading to them and praying over them. We had three little songs we sang was their lullaby. And I mean, it was amazing how they would just, you could just see their body relaxing and boom, they're gone. Now we had girl, boy. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they're all in the same room. So you got to kind of space them out there. And let me say something to the dads. Listen, this is not just a mom job. Dads, we need to roll our sleeves up at bedtime and play a vital role in helping those kids get down and get to sleep. And when they know that a father has taken time to spend time with them and to speak encouraging words to them and tell them that he loves them and pray over them, it's amazing what this does for these kids. Here's what's interesting, too, is that you don't stop this just because they're getting a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
There's a way to maintain a bedtime ritual, even with your teenagers. Our youngest son, the youngest and the oldest have something in common when it comes to their role, their relationship with their parents, and that they're the two kids in the group that get their parents all to themselves for a while. Mm. The first one has them until the second one comes along, and once the last one's gone, that last one has them. Well, he was in our home for a couple of years before he launched. And he would come to, his bedroom was upstairs. He'd come to the top stairs. I'm going to bed now. Now, that wasn't a signal telling us he's going to bed. That's a signal saying, it's time for you to come by,
right.
and say goodnight. Mm. And it, you know, this kid grew up to be a firefighter.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a tough kid, strong kid, but this played a big role. So anyway.
No, I love that. And one thing you said too, I think some kids, you don't have a lot of time to connect with them after school, whatever. It's busy, busy, busy. And once their heads hit that pillow, they start asking those questions or mm-hmm. telling you what's really going on at school. And if we're so rushed, we don't leave any space for them to process. I have one son that's the only time he really opens up
right.
is at bedtime. But at that time, I am done. Like, I'm exhausted. So now I need to move my bedtime up to like 4 p.m. to start like giving him some leeway to say, okay, we need to be in bed so that we have some intentional time for you to just lay there and think and ask all these questions. Right. So I'm not like, we'll talk about this tomorrow. It's past your bedtime.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. By the way, I would not make the bedtime something that's carved in stone.
Mm-hmm.
This is when we're trying to get to bed. But some of these kids, they may have something deep on their heart mm-hmm. they need to talk about.
Yeah.
It's a great opportunity. Now, we mentioned, Michelle mentioned, and I mentioned, a ritual, but the ritual can be different for each family. One of our kids has two older boys, are avid readers. And so after they've done everything, they give the kids a certain amount of time to just read by themselves. And they read themselves to sleep. It's fine. There's no hard and fast rules other than be deliberate about this. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, use some common sense.
Yeah.
And that's why I say the earlier you start shifting the house, shifting the cadence and all that stuff, quieting things down and all, the easier it is to get them asleep, those eyes closed.
Those early years are super hard. You know, they're coming in your room at night, all hours of the night. They're wanting to be in your bed, on the floor. Mm-hmm. What do you recommend about that?
Well, here's the thing that parents who are pretty conscientious about bedtime rituals that get those kids asleep, they have traditionally and statistically less trouble with kids coming up and keep coming, wanting to come into their bed and all that stuff. And these kids just, when they're going to bed with a lot more sense of security.
Yeah.
And, you know, one other thing, we didn't mention it, but it's also good when they're really tired to get them to go to sleep. And each kid's different. Some kids are very ready by whatever your family bedtime is for the children. It's 7:30, 8, 9, whatever it is. Other kids, and that's where when they do get home from school, you know, you might say, hey, I want you to run down to so-and-so and back, and if they don't look tired, do it again. You know, that kind of
take a few laps around the house.
Just make sure. And I'm not, it sounds like I'm contradicting myself. Well, that sounds like it's crazy. I'm just saying, make sure in the afternoon they've exerted themselves well, that they're ready to go. Because, for instance, if a kid, an older kid, is taking a nap in the afternoon,
right,
that's good. They're going to be wide awake.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, that's very wise. And I also think as they get older, sometimes like on a Friday or Saturday, we will just watch a family movie on the couch and it's against everything in my brain because I'm such a schedule person. I'm like, no, you need to be in your bed and we have a routine. But I'm like, you know what? It's Saturday. They're older now. We can just let them fall asleep on the couch watching a family cartoon and then we'll carry them to bed. So then, there's that flexibility.
Yeah. And obviously there's a point where in their teenage years, you're not setting some hard, fast rule about when they have to be asleep. But you can say, we are shifting to everybody is, we got to get this family, the rest of the family asleep and to bed. And once again, if you have very active teenagers, usually they're pretty tired.
Yeah.
And they want to get to sleep. So.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Yes. Bedtime battles are always lingering in our home. That's for sure.
And you know, bedtime battles can put such a wet blanket over other the whole relationship and everything else, especially if we're yelling and screaming at them, nagging them, and all that stuff. It's just hard for those kids to say, yeah, I really look forward to bedtime when mom or dad are just yelling at me a lot.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good point. Let's talk about school choice. This is always a hot topic, especially in Christian communities.
Right.
There, I think, are ups and downsides to any sort of school choice. And I think the key thing is, you know, to not judge. But especially in the Christian community, there are people that are avid about Christian school. There are people that are passionate about homeschooling. There are people that are excited about public school. How do we decide what the best type of school is for our kids?
Well, look, Michelle, I think you've framed this in the opening question with the bigger dilemma when it comes to nailing down how should I get my kids educated, and that we tend to have preferences. They're built into us, might be the way we were raised, might be some things going on around us, whatever. But it is so critical that we bring some maturity to this whole discussion as the adults, and recognize that each option you have in educating your kid has trade-offs. There's upsides to each one of them. There are downsides to each one of them. And what you need to know going in is what those are, and be ready to have a plan to leverage the upside and counter the downside as much as you can. So all that said, how do we make a choice? Well, I think there's a couple of questions you want to make sure you're asking yourself. First one is, which one is best for this particular child? Because we right now are very fortunate in that we do have, most parents listening to this have several options that they can choose from for their kid. But not every option is good for all of my kids. And I realize it might be a whole lot easier for the family. And frankly, some of the issues going on in the family may leave you, that may make the decision for you. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to go to this school or this public school. We can't afford the Christian school because of the way our work situation goes with both parents working. There's no homeschooling is off the table, whatever it is. But, you know, you might have one kid that thrives so much better in a smaller setting, but the kid coming up right behind him thrives even better in a bigger arena, especially if they have other things they're interested in, like sports and stuff like that, that aren't as easy in small, you know, I realize homeschoolers fortunately can take advantage of some of the local sports. I think we can all see that because none of our kids are the same, we need to have savvy and looking at each one and what's best for them. And by the way, we might start out with one school. Let's say we have them in a Christian school, and it's in their best interest to shift to a private school or a public school later on, or even be homeschooled. They're homeschooled for a while and shift there. There's a lot of things that may need to be done. The second question is, which one fits best with your family configuration? For instance, I think you know, homeschooling can be very effective, and brings with it to the table some great options and freedoms, frankly, for some families. But it can be just the opposite for other families. Mm-hmm. And some of these options are pretty expensive, and they just may not have the funds to do it. So you gotta keep that there, and then. This one's going to be a little touchy, and that is, am I making my decision based on something that I'm scared about? I want to say this carefully. Please, if you're listening to this podcast, just hear me out and listen, because I obviously see that there is clear and present danger out there for our kids, that there are things going on, let's say at the public school level, that there's just no doubt about it. It's contrary to our value system. It's contrary to our belief system. And there's no question on that. But the problem is if fear is setting the agenda, if fear is leading the way, then the decision I make has a good chance of backfiring on me. Now, why would I say that, Michelle? Why do you think?
Because God isn't small.
Exactly.
He's mighty.
Exactly.
We can't be afraid.
See, fear is a legitimate emotion. God put it there for good reasons, and it can protect us, and it can warn us. There's all that stuff. But you don't want it to do your thinking for you. Mm-hmm. Because once we let fear hold the high ground, we've taken the one solution out of the high ground that can help us make sane decisions and work with the challenges we have, and that's the Lord. Mm. Also, I think it's a bad advertisement for our faith to our kids.
Right.
If fear is just so overwhelming us as parents when it comes to how we educate our kids and some of the toxic things that are out there right now that we choose a solution that is simply there to take threat off the table and threat whatever, I think it says to them, so our God isn't big enough to sustain us through some of this stuff. Because see, the world they're going to live in, the world that surrounds us has a lot of serious issues that it's contending with. And there are issues if we're going to live in it.
Yeah.
And what we need to learn how to do is handle those things and face those things in the power of the Lord. See, I think there are two dynamics that we as parents have to always keep in mind. Our job is to, on one side, we need to protect our kids, but we also need to prepare our kids to thrive in the world that's surrounding them. Thrive, even if that world is very hostile to what they believe and who they are. Well, I think we do better off in this whole situation on school choice if we keep in mind my job more than anything else, more than educating my kids, is to make sure that I'm raising a strong kid rather than just a safe kid. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing. You can get a safe kid. You can raise them up in a very safe environment, but you don't necessarily send them into their adult world ready to take on what's waiting for them. And what's waiting for them could be just licking its chops, can't wait for them to, okay, get out from underneath all this protection you got, and I'm going to take you out so fast. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you raise a strong kid, you typically get a safe one thrown in by default. They're in a much better position to process these things. So now, all that said, there are some really rough things there, and this is where I think if we're going to put our kids, let's say in a public school environment, you just can't send them in there, emotionally and spiritually naked,
right?
Because they'll get taken out fast. You have to prepare them more. But let me go the other direction. If, let's say, you send your kid to a Christian school, if you're sending them there for that Christian school to do the job of giving them biblical depth and discipling them, you've got it wrong, because that's the parent's job. That's not the school's job. Mm. They may get exposed to the Bible and learn some things, but the job of discipling is from this Deuteronomy 6. It's clear. It's us parents teach these things when they get up in the morning, when they go through the day, and when they go to bed at night, and model these things for them. So that's, I think, one of the easy traps to fall into. I'm putting my kid in this nice, safe Christian school. All the spiritual stuff is handled now.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about that. Well, you raise the chance that you get a kid that comes out of a school with a lot of biblical knowledge that is simply in his head.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bible said, "The word have I hid in my heart, that I might not sin against thee." So that we want to get it into their heart. So Christian schools are a great option, a phenomenal option. Homeschooling is a phenomenal option. I think I would have turned out so much better if I'd have been homeschooled. but my mother would not have survived back then.
Yeah, six kids.
Yeah, we had one six kids.
Tim Kimmel, that'd be a lot.
But anyway, just be careful on the fear thing, because fear-based parenting is you just got to know going in, it is not going to give you what you want. But one final thing, is this school configuration the one that's best designed to help my kid really become a truly great person?
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're just looking at it from it's easy to look at school through one dimensions or single lenses. Oh, this is the top academics school there, or sports-wise, they're the powerhouse or whatever. There's a whole lot of other dynamics going on there too.
Yeah. It's easy to fall into the trap of, oh, we have to get into this top-rated school because then they'll get into a good college. Universities look at their test scores. They know that it's heavy, great. But the reality is, are they always producing well-rounded kids? They may or may not. But mm-hmm. I toured a school years ago when we were looking at schools here in Phoenix, and has a great reputation and great test scores, blah, blah, blah. Halfway through the tour, I ditched. I felt oppressed because the school was so rigid. Everyone had to march in a line to the restroom. They couldn't turn their head. They couldn't laugh. You couldn't have any individuality when it came to clothing, backpack, folders. Everything was uniform. And I'm like, I feel like this is like a prison. This might be good for our oldest child. because he is a rule follower. He's by the book. He's gifted. All those things. Then we have two other boys coming up the pike here. They will suffer in this environment. Right. So I was like, I'm gonna bow out. Now that might be great for some people, but for our kids and knowing them, I knew, okay, this will make them really great at Latin, and they're gonna know how to recite Shakespeare, and they'll probably get a full ride to any in-state school if they stick this through. But I don't know if they're gonna fit in here with their personalities and their gifting, and it's just different. And so I want them to be, I want a school that's a little more well-rounded and does some parties and sports and
well, here's the interesting thing on that, Michelle. When you look at some of the studies that have been done in like The Millionaire Next Door and The Millionaire Mind, and if we were just looking at future success in dollars and cents, the people in the upper echelon of that weren't going to exclusive schools like that. Mm-hmm. And all they were sometimes in the junior college when it came to or they went to trade school. There's a lot of things that went on. Listen, when it comes to how your kids turn out and how they leverage the education to get, what's far more important for you as a parent or me as a parent is not what I'm getting put into their head. It's what I'm putting into their heart. And that's where the home plays such a big role. Yeah. But then how I prepare them to go to school, like we, you know, our kids went to public school, but we taught them, it's a great chance to go glow in the darkness.
Yeah.
Love people, be kind.
Yeah.
Show respect to your teachers, work hard at school. Mm-hmm. When you play sports, you know, give it all you got.
Right.
But they had all kinds of friends. They had, you know, asset friends, liability friends, but they just wanted to be good to them all, and it balanced them out to be able to thrive as adults. So anyway,
school choice
is always a tough one.
But I like how you said, you just have to ask yourself, am I making this decision based on fear? We can't be, I mean, as Christians today, the culture is scary. Hollywood is scary. Media is scary. The neighbors are scary. Like we, it's easy to want to recoil and to base everything on, oh gosh, I'm scared for my kid to be out in this world today. And I get that because I feel that. But to your point, we're trying to raise strong kids, not safe kids, because in the end, they're going to be adults and they're going to need to know how to navigate this world that is antagonistic to the gospel.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what you were just saying there, Michelle, reminded me of this, that they've done studies of families where the parents, there's a lot of neurosis and stress between parents or in one of the parents. They say in those families where the adults are really, you know, where fear is gripping them or stress or anxiety, whatever, by the way, there's some anxiety that comes with real issues that we're dealing with, but I'm talking about just this pervasive stuff that our culture wants to force us into. They say even the pets get neurotic in those homes.
Wow.
So the point is that if you're running around scared about all the horrible things that are going on in the culture, guess who else is scared?
Your pets.
Well, no, I'm just kidding. No.
Yeah.
See, this is what we have to contend with here.
You just said your goldfish. Your goldfish are anxious.
Your kids. And think about this in their teenage years. There are so many challenges that they're, and yet there's so many parents out there just scared to death of what it's going to be like when their kids are teenagers. I said, well, this is not a good time to let that emotion rule the day, because these kids need to know the people that are called mom and dad are not panicking,
right?
Because they already have plenty to panic about.
Yeah,
they're the teenagers right in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. So I think it gives us a fabulous chance to make a difference there. Mm-hmm. And I think as we as parents, if we're Christians, if we're Rockweilers on the neck of those public school teachers and administrators, and all they see us for is that we're measuring them by Christian standards, and they've got to really walk the line, or they'll hear from us. this is not a good role to play.
Right.
I do think that we have voice. We should make our voices known. We don't roll over and play dead and let, you know, some school board or whatever just do absolute nonsense. And we have to stand up against evil when it's there. But for the most part, they see us as allies and assets to them as human beings, that we are wanting to weigh in and be someone that they, this parent of faith that seems to care about me.
Yeah.
I think they'd be more inclined to listen to us and lean on us. And I think in the long run, it will really enhance the education our kids are getting because they're watching how we deal with their education.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really true. Okay, our last question. Let's save the best for last, in my opinion, because this is a hot topic. Let's talk about alcohol in the home. So I was raised in an alcohol-free home. I never saw alcohol. It was because my dad struggled with alcohol before I was born. So neither of my parents drank. And in my mind, when I'd go to a friend's house and I'd see beer in their fridge, I was super judgy. It took me a long time, and I became friends and went to parties in high school. I never drank. I had my first pina colada at TGI Fridays on my 21st birthday. And I was like, I don't really see the big deal, right? So I'm a goody-goody in this straight edge home. You contrast that to a lot of families where alcohol is, you know, part of life and it's their daily or nightly or wine or whatever on the table with dinner. I think it's hard for Christians to know where that line is,
right?
As far as setting an example for our kids. Is there a right? Is there a wrong?
This is a good question. I think I'm just going to let you answer it.
No, this is a call to ask Tim.
Look, let's first of all step back and take in the biblical big picture, because it's not what my opinion or your opinion or anybody listening's opinion that rules the day. If we're going to be honest with ourselves from a spiritual point of view, it's what God says. Now, the Bible is not neutral on these things, but at the same time, it's not absolute in either direction. In other words, if you take the whole counsel of God, you realize that alcohol played a part in a lot of people's lives. Say, oh, it wasn't for a minute. I'm sorry, you're dreaming. That is a nice, convenient thing to throw out, but it doesn't hold up to the historical record. It's been a part of life. And so I think if you choose to abstain and not have it in your home, that's completely legitimate. If you choose to have it, but you do it biblically, where it's in moderation, and you're running it, it's not running you. The Bible gives you freedom there. But there, so let's make sure that we don't get inundated with a bunch of emails and people all ticked off because you are holding one side or the other and saying there is no other side because there are two sides in this one. Now, all that said, I think you take other biblical wisdom and put it to play here. And let's say, like your father, you said he grew up with alcoholism in his family. So he chose not to have it in his home. I think that shows real savvy and wisdom. Because if you were brought up in a home where it was abused and it cost your family dearly, it might be in your best interest not to have it as part of your life, or at least have it as part of your home. I think another reason here's let's look at Tim and Darcy, what we chose to do, and we're not the standard bearer of anything. It's just what we chose to do, and here's why. We decided as we were raising our kids not to have alcohol in our home and not to consume it in our home, mainly because we thought this is one of the biggest problems among teenagers right now. And we were going to have, at one time, of our four kids, three of them were teenagers simultaneously. It's a big problem. On top of that, you know, you might see that one of your kids just has a propensity towards addictive behavior. And for their sake, you might choose that. Or you have a tendency towards addictive behavior. You don't trust yourself, or maybe you struggled when you were a young person or in the past. It just might be smarter not to use it. And then I worked with youth when I was a lot younger and our kids were younger, and I felt like, okay, they're at our house a lot, and just for their sake, we're just not going to have them opening up the refrigerator and seeing it or you know, liquor cabinet. I have no problem with anybody out there that does. You know, now, that was when our kids were under our roof. That's not the way it is now in our home. But we just made that decision based on we had young kids and we wanted to try and solve this thing. But there's a downside to that choice, because I think it's part of our job to teach our kids how to handle things in moderation. Everything, food, exercise, play, work, alcohol, you name it, even medications. And so by not having it in our home, I also took that option off the table of showing them how to use it wisely. But we were teaching them as we went.
So I think
what you have to do is just you have to sit back and say, look, first of all, I would pray like mad. Lord, it's not what I want. It's not what culture says. It's not what my friends are pushing me about. It isn't even primarily what my kids need the most. Lord, what do you want for me and for us as a family? And take your cues from him. And I think looking at his word and listening to his heart through the word, I think he'll guide you on that. But if you choose to have alcohol in the home, I just think you need to show some real common sense. Because if you have teenagers and they have friends coming over, it could be very dangerous for because you don't, maybe you feel confident in your own kids, but you don't know where those kids are coming from. I think you need to do more than just show them how to drink in moderation. You need to teach them what the Bible says about this and why you make these choices. Otherwise, it'll get a hook in you. I think anything that we do in isolation or in a vacuum is going to probably come back and bite us and hurt our kids. Everything should be done in context. And so talk with your kids about it. But bottom line, look, I just want to say, anybody listening here, if you feel that alcohol is just a really huge need you have, and you're making your choice because you really prefer and need it, then you probably need to get it out of the house. Because it's now getting a hook in you. It's got the high ground. And be careful about the social stuff, because once again, it can get carried away so easily.
Very wise. So your answer is there's not a one-size-fits-all answer. It depends on your family, your propensity, addiction, your past, the people in your home, the age of your kids.
What if I have, the Bible talks about the weaker brother. What if I have somebody that's real close to our family that, you know, their alcoholism has had a real problem with them. They're trying to stay dry, or they easily fall, and they really have a lot of contact with our family. For their sake alone, I would make the decision. I think the way it's been put into our culture now, it's just kind of like the paint palette you pick, or the wallpaper. It's just part of the backdrop. It's just there, and if it's not there, there's something wrong with you and your picture. Don't let the culture set your theology. Don't let the culture define what's best or worst for your family. That's where the Bible comes to our rescue. And I think God's grace comes to our rescue. And I hope in all the things we talked about in this particular session with the amazing Michelle Brook, that you'll bring grace to how you process it too.
Because
this is what we're trying to show, is equilibrium.
Yeah.
and how to live a balanced Christian life that is fueled by God's heart and led by His word. And I think you'll find yourself getting through a lot of that, whether it's getting your kids to sleep at night or where to put them in school or even showing affection to them.
Yep, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Tim. If you have any questions that you would like Tim to answer, please email us at family@gracebasedfamilies.com. No question is off the table. We would love to just be encouraging to you and hopefully help you give some more grace to those people closest to you and in your home. We are grateful for you. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Grace-Based Families Podcast. For more information, check us out at gracebasedfamilies.com and follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Until next time.